Right in front of us, legendary sports writer at the Boston Globe, contributor to ESPN, it is Bob Ryan. How are you, Bob?
I'm just trying to take it all in. This is an amazing place. I've heard about it, but nobody can conceive of what it really looks like in the abstract. You have to come see it.
This is your first time?
First, starting with the one lane bridge that's on the way. Yeah, it's an adventure, you know. No one told me it was 2 miles down a dirt road, but it's all worth it. It's really something.
Yeah, does this scream Vermont when you're driving in, or what?
I know. So no, this is beautiful. I'm looking. This is really something.
Little Fenway, Field of Dreams,
Little Wrigley.
Look at the detail too. You got the retired numbers up there. You know, you got the order of the standings. Who's playing? The score.
Yep.
All the little details to it, Bob.
That's great. And the Citgo sign, of course. You got to love that.
Hey, Bob, you've been in Boston for a long time, obviously. Do you remember the Travis Roy incident when it happened? Do you remember the impact that it had in Boston when it happened?
I remember I mean, it got a lot of notoriety. And it was just such a stunning story. And certainly it got a lot of attention, and it was just incomprehensible, you know. The whole idea of it, first shift, 10 seconds, 11 seconds, whatever, you know, and for it to happen in that regard, in that way, you know, it was completely strange. Did I know anything about him beforehand? No. I'm more of a basketball guy, but certainly I was a columnist, and I went to BC, and I'm, of course, you know, so I got a proprietary interest in BC hockey, and therefore, and I got to know Jackie over the years, because, you know, Jack Parker is a phenomenal Celtic fan.
Yeah.
And people don't know, most people didn't know that his all-time athletic idol was not number four, it was number six. And he'll tell you that to this day. Well, anyway, so I'm just digressing, but the point is, a prized BU recruit had suffered a tragic accident.
Is the name Travis Roy still well known in the Boston area?
Yeah, the name has stuck and hung. You know, he's because of, you know, the work that's been done to the foundation. The name has been in the public discourse ever since.
And this wiffle ball tournament?
Not as much, I don't think. Down in Boston, but Travis's name, yes.
Bob, go through your career now. When you think back of all the years, what's the most thing you're most proud of? The most thing that sticks out for you?
Well, it's the thing I'm most proud of is that the essence of being a newspaper man to me was deadline writing.
Yeah.
That was the challenge. That was the ultimate test of who you were as a writer. And I'm a writer. You know, I've done all this other TV stuff. It's been great. You know, it's been fun. Radio, I love radio. I love all the auxiliary stuff. But when I look in the mirror in the morning, I'm a writer. I've always been a writer. And the thing I'm proudest of is trying to produce literate, witty, incisive, readable, fun stuff, worthy writing on deadline. So of all the things I did, I'm proudest of that. But I'm just lucky to have had a career that took me to places I never thought of. I mean, things have happened that weren't on my radar screen.
Yeah.
You know, all you want when you're 21 years old, you just want a job.
Yeah.
You want a job, right? I don't care what the profession is.
Exactly.
You want a job, and you want to see if you're any good at it, and then where it takes you. And I never dreamed, you know, I have a very unusual career. I mean, you could literally parade in 1,000, maybe 10,000 writers, and certainly columnists in America, and not find one other who had only worked at one paper.
Ugh.
It's not the way it works, but it did for me. It went summer intern, got rehired, stayed at the Globe, and then 44 years later, you know, checked out. Now, there was one brief interlude when I went to Channel 5, but even then, I was still writing a column a week for the Globe. So I never had my foot out of the water there in the Globe. And then after a year and a half, I realized I knew TV wasn't what I wanted to do.
Right.
It was for somebody else. And that was fine. I got the answer to the question, which was no. I had an opportunity at a great place. Channel 5 at the time was the best place in town, no question, and they treated me great. It wasn't for me, and I was able to go back to the Globe.
Nice.
Bob Ryan joining us here on the Huddle, 101.3 The Game, 1013thegame.com, live at the Travis Roy Wiffle Ball Tournament. Bob, if you're at a cocktail party and people are gathered around you, what's the first story that you're telling?
I don't know. I thought we might be going, because people want to know bird stories, you know. I mean, I'd say of all the people that I covered, he's the most, he's the one that people associate me individually with a little bit. And I did a book with him, as Jackie McMullen's done two with him. But I got there first. And I did a book with him, and I know him and like him and you know, just admire the way he played and think he was special. He struck a chord with people, unlike unlike others that in the history of the team and so forth. But I don't know. There's a story. It involves my favorite personality, and that's Dave Cowens. And the long story short is that he literally retired in my hotel room in Terre Haute, Indiana in 1980.
Wow.
And I'll try and make this as the Reader's Digest version. it was exhibition season. We were in Terre Haute. The reason we were there is that for Bird, it was the second year. They had exhibitions throughout the state of Indiana.
Right.
We were anchored in Terre Haute. We were going to Indianapolis to the east. And that night, they were going to Evansville to play the Bulls.
Okay.
So they have a morning workout. I go to the workout. I come back, and it's noontime, and I'm on the phone. I'm actually on the phone, of all things, talking to Paul Silas, who's now a member of the Seattle Sonics. And knock on the door. And there's Dave Cowens is standing there in his practice uniform, number 18, and he's holding a sheaf of yellow legal pad papers. And I said, what's up? He said, come on. And I said, I'm talking to Silas. Want to say hello? So he chats with Silas, and then he hangs up. And he hands me the thing. I start to read it, and oh, wait a minute, the pages are out of order. So now I got to go back. My God, this is a retirement statement. And he's retiring on the spot. And I said, well, what do you want from me? And he said, well, I want you, if you would be kind enough to put it in order and edit it, and then would you get it in the afternoon? Would you get it in the paper? He wanted this specifically. We still had an afternoon, separate afternoon paper in 1980. I said, sure, give me about an hour, because I knew he could write. He had already written something for the Globe. He was literate. He could write. It wasn't bad. It was just a matter of some punctuation and some sentence, a couple of transitions, But basically what I came up with, about 85 to 90% him and 10, 15% me, It was very well written. So we got it in the paper. Now that's part A. Part B. We get to the bus is leaving to go to Terre Haute about 4 o'clock. Okay. It's about an hour and a half down the road. He gets on the bus. Now, this is what I've been told time and again. He gets on the bus, and like George Washington addressing the troops at Valley Forge, he announces that he's quitting, And he tells Parrish, who had been playing like crap, by the way, at that point, I know you can do the job and all this and that. And, of course, ML being ML, having that, needing the last word and being, the guy, the wit that he is, he said, all right, now, you're done? He said, get the f***. Stop, excuse me. You got a delay.
ML Carr.
Hit the dumb button.
Yeah, that's okay. ML Carr.
I hope you have a delay.
7 seconds.
So, good. So, all right. And then the bus pulls out.
Yeah.
Now, I'm standing there with Dave Cowens. Well, what's up now, Dave? Well, I'm going to go home. Home is Newport, Kentucky, remember.
Wow.
A couple of days. I'm going to go home. Only problem was, Dave being Dave, and I've been through this with him before, I hardly had any money on him. Didn't have his credit cards with him. I rented a car at Avis and handed him the keys. And off he went. Now, I challenge any writer in America to top that story.
I love that. He was one of the last player coaches, wasn't he?
He was a player. And of course, this is right. He had been a player coach. And,
yeah.
After 2 years after we took that sabbatical, when he took that little walk around for two months, he was a player coach. And then that's when they brought in Bill Fitch.
Oh, I love it.
Bobby, someone growing up, reading Lee Montville and yourself and Peter Gammons and listening to the Sports Huddle on Sunday night, I mean, that was pretty much all we had.
Yeah.
Did you ever see this coming where you're spending your hours doing podcasts and all over social media?
No, I mean, obviously technology has completely overwhelmed and become the currency for everybody. It wrecked newspapers, and people didn't see it coming and had no idea how to, handle this new onslaught, this new dissemination of information. And newspapers are dying and will be dead as we know them by the middle of the 21st century, if not sooner. I don't think there's any way to salvage newspapers as we know them. They're in your hand, delivered.
Right. Right.
It's all going to be an electronic, unfortunately, because it's not as good a way to absorb the information but it's the way it is. No. And a podcast, oh my God, who would have been able to conceive of this? I'm a part of one now, and I have been a part of my own, and I'm hopefully that's going to come back soon. But, I sit in my office at home and do a podcast with Mike Lupica and Mitch Albom. And that's produced out of Los Angeles. I mean, how she would have told me this 10 years ago. Yeah. 10, 5, 5 years ago. You told me that was what I would be doing 2 days a week in my own house. I never would have conceived of what the hell you're talking about.
Arnie,
what's a podcast?
Arnie does a national show
for Fox from my living room in Vermont.
Well, who would have been able to conceive of this, And that's having an effect on radio. You know that. Here's another area where technology is overwhelmed.
Not everything's been smooth sailing. There's got to be some athletes that are not Bob Ryan fans, or a few that stick out, a few that said, hey, I don't like what you wrote about me.
Oh, sure, you have. Yeah. If have some kind of negative, you know, incident of some sort along the way. You know, you've never, that means you've never taken a stand.
Right,
you don't have
right.
any guts. You never had an opinion. Yeah, sure, I had my most famous one was with Doug Griffin, Dwight Evans. And how much time do you have?
We got plenty of time for you, Bob.
Doug Griffin seemed like such a nice, calm guy.
Well, it's 1975, yeah. and this is before I was a full-time columnist, but the Globe allowed people to do columns, you know, at random all the time. And the Red Sox embarked on a two-week road trip. And on the first day of the trip, I got a column published in the paper assessing the then state of affairs of the 1975 Red Sox in June, okay? And they weren't going too well at the time. And I went down a team and a pitching staff, and I said that the one that was – oh, there's another sub-story comes out of this. But said that Diego Seguí
Jim Willoughby.
What's his name? Diego Seguí and somebody else. I said, there's a charter plane leaving tomorrow with Amelia Earhart at the control. There's a sub-story that comes out of that. But the big one was, you know, I said, well, why is Yaz still batting third? He should be batting sixth against left-handers. Yeah. And what's so great about Dwight Evans, by the way, that, you know, obviously he proved me wrong.
Yeah.
That's why. But, you know, they could use Rick Miller. They could trade Dwight Evans. And Doug Griffin, and they quote-unquote, is a totally unacceptable Major League second baseman. All right. Now, by the way, 3 days later, they traded for Denny Doyle.
Oh.
And you know how that went.
Oh, yeah.
He hit 310. It was a hero the rest of the year. It went to the World Series. Oh, yeah. So, they're away. First day, Ken Harrelson is with color. And Jack Stockton, that first night, Harrelson's ripped me a new you-know-what. Okay, that's fine. So, now, the trip goes on. They come home. And they're playing the Yankees. And I opened up on a Friday night, naturally. I didn't go Friday, but I went Saturday. So it's the first time now I'm in the locker room after I've written a column.
Uh-huh.
So the game's over. They win the game. I come in. I forget what I was going to write. But I remember I was going to go over and say hi to Johnny Pesky, with whom I had who didn't have a great relationship with Johnny Pesky. And I feel the sensation of someone behind me. You know, and I turn around. It's Griffin. And he starts shoving me. Puts his hands up. He starts shoving me. And you get out of here. You don't belong in here. Blah, 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 blah. And the then clubhouse manager came over and very convinced, and he very nicely, you know, it'd be best if you leave. I said, I don't want to mess this up for everybody else, you know.
Right.
You know, and I don't want to, you know, they got work to do. They don't need this, you know. So I did. I went out in that corridor between the clubhouse and the staircase that leads to the dugout, and here comes Evans. And he comes up, and he spits on the floor and says, I don't want you writing anything about me ever, good or bad.
Oh, jeez. Jeez.
Which is
wow.
a really creative line, if you think about it. Long story short, in 1977, I am the beat man now, the full-time 100%.
Oh, jeez.
And I get along great with both.
Oh, jeez, yeah. How
it's
funny.
It's like it never happened, and it was fine.
Just seems like such a class act.
Well, I mean, you know, here's the thing about the young Dewey, and it took him a long time to get over this. This is my opinion. He was the most insecure in a game where you have to be willing to go over and understand you're going to go 0-for-4. Well, all right. Remember, he came up, he was 20 years old, at the end of a pennant race in 1972. He was a prodigy and a great talent. But he was insecure to the point where every day, if he went 0-for-4, he was convinced they were going to send him back.
Hmm.
He didn't have enough self-confidence. He was a wonderful talent. And, of course, he didn't harness it all until Walt Reniac came around. Because he's one of the very few players in history of baseball of any consequence who had a better decade in his 30s than he had in his 20s, statistically.
Mm. Wow.
There's very few. The most notable one is Sam Rice. Paul Molitor is another one.
Paul Molitor.
On a lesser level, Tony Phillips. But you check out Dwight Evans' 30s as opposed to his 20s.
Wow.
And it's all because of his Walt Reniac. You know, he was a disciple of the Walt Reniac batting style.
Bob Ryan joining us here on the Huddle, 101.3 The Game, 101.3thegame.com, live at the Travis Roy Wiffle Ball Tournament. Bob, you say you're a Corey, you're a writer, so what's the favorite story that you've ever written? Is it a story that you had to chase for a long time? Is it a subject that you got to talk about? What's your favorite story?
I was more of a writer than a reporter. I mean, I did my due diligence of feature stories. I had a lot of fun feature stories. One of my favorite feature stories was I was the supposedly, I'm just going by what they told me, I was the first quote-unquote Gentile, i.e. non-LDS, non-Latter-day Saints, to do the Sean Bradley story.
Okay.
I was 16 years old in Castledale, Utah, 150 miles southwest of Salt Lake City, lived on his grandfather's ranch, basically the family did. And he was 16, had his own pickup truck that the vanity plate was slamming, SLAM'N. And he told me he didn't mind being tall. It was okay with him. The only bad thing was he was getting too hard to ride a horse.
Oh, jeez.
But it was a wonderful cultural exposure, 4 days, fascinating on many levels.
Really?
That was something. That's one of my favorite stories that I did. They were playing. I came up here once in one of my all-time favorite stories. The reason I got a Vermont Association, when Coach Brennan was in his heyday, actually, but before they broke through starting winning, you know, getting into winning the tour. But when he was doing full-time radio.
Yeah.
And in the morning, Corman, the coach.
Yep.
And Laura. And I said, this is crazy. And I had met him a couple times when he was coaching Yale. But other than that, I didn't know him. I said, I got to go do this story. And I did. And we're really good friends
ever
since.
Well, you've been coming up here to a couple of America East Championship games,
yeah,
I know, over the last few years.
I haven't saw. Look, I'm a big Catamount fan.
Good.
And I was here the night the court, when he got the court named after him. And I know I'm a big. I'm very proprietary toward the Cats.
What's the hardest story you ever had to the
hardest? Anything to do with hockey.
Yeah?
No, because it's not my game. You know, the other three sports, I feel I know it from the inside out. But hockey, I've never played it.
Right.
I've been on skates. I've had a stick in my hand. Never at the same time.
You're right, George Plimpton.
So I've never. and so the nuances, you know, the anticipation things, the little subtleties that I don't have. Every night that I had to do hockey, I was praying the score would be 8-7. So I'd have goals to talk about.
And back then it was often when Esposito and Orr were playing.
I actually did once cover about, I think they got the Bruins. I actually was covering the Bruins against the California Golden State.
Yes, yes.
With the white skates.
And they had a horrible night, and they got beat like 9-5. That was my kind of score.
Funny.
They used to skate around with white skates, as I recall. Yeah. What was the best decade, Bob, for
80s,
Boston?
80s. For me.
Because of basketball?
You touch. For me, I thought you were going to go, you know, personally. I mean, it's all about me. Right?
I mean Boston.
If I could turn the clock back January 1st, 1980, till January 31st, 1989, professionally, do every bit of it over again, good or bad, good and or bad, I'd do that starting in the next 5 minutes. That was the decade. The league, the players, teams were fun. The accessibility was tremendous. 8 of those 10 years – you were going to spend spring in Los Angeles because, was fun for us Easterners to get out there. But it was the Bird Magic era. It was the Michael beginning of the era. The 76ers and Dr. J, the big bad Pistons, you know, the whole thing. It was terrific. And so from a basketball standpoint, a writer standpoint, that was my favorite decade. The 70s weren't bad either because I was very attached to that team. The Cowans, Havlicek, Nelson, Sanders, all those guys, JoJo, Cheney. So if you want to go back to January 1st, 70, to 89, January 31, I'll take the two of them.
Well, Bob, we appreciate the time. I got to tell you, this meeting has been 17 years in the making for me because it was June of 2002. Both my parents are print journalists also. We were at the APSC convention in Seattle, and you were getting out of the elevator, and I went up to try to say hi to you, and I just missed you as you had to go in to give – you were the speaker at that convention, I think.
A speaker at one of the panels with the sports editor, Joe Sullivan.
I was trying to come in and say hi to you, and I just missed you. But 17 years later, I got the chance. So.
You know, I have one bad – not it wasn't about that, but things stick in your head, you know. That's how I know when Daryl Kyle died.
It was that week.
That Saturday afternoon, I remember being up in Ford. You know, it was just so stunning. Oh. Anyway, but Seattle, one of my five favorite American cities.
Wow. Well, Bob, welcome up to the Travis Roy Wiffleball Tournament.
Fun to be here.
You're going to love it. It's an absolute blast. Have a great time while you're up here. If there's anything we could do, please let us know. Bob Ryan, the great Bob Ryan.